We're holding on the test on the days a little bit past the middle of the Amud. The last thing we had learned was we were talking about the simonim of Chayas versus Behemoth. Now we were focusing on the characteristics of the horns. We said also that Chayas tend to have pointy hooves. There is, by the way, an interesting point in that regard, which I didn't bring up yesterday, which is the poskim discuss when it comes to birds. We're going to learn later on in the parak they need a misura which ones are kosher, because there's a lot of them that we the Torah lists 24 of them that are not, but we don't have the ability, we're not able to identify all of them, nor are we really able to identify the simonim of birds that we learned about yesterday, because as we learned, there was a machlokas rishonim on a number of them. Now, what about animals? Do you need a masoda in order to eat an animal, or is it just anything that chews its cud and has split hooves is good? So you actually have a discussion in posting about that, and this is Negea nowadays, for example. At one point, they were importing into Eretz Yisrael, they were importing Zebu, which are a type of cattle from India. So those are not, so they're those. Historically, you don't have Jewish communities that ate them because there weren't really Jewish communities in that area to know about them. Or you're allowed to eat them. So different poskim, different contemporary poskim discuss the question of whether you're allowed to. One point is they were able to crossbreed them successfully with regular cattle, and that was a strong simon that they're kosher, because the Gemara tells us in Bechoros, we'll learn in a few months, Bez Hashem, that kosher and non-kosher animals are not able to interbreed. But there was quite a bit of discussion about that, whether you need simonim, whether simonim are enough for domestic and wild animals, or whether in addition you also need a masorah for them. In any case, the last thing we learned was, we may as well go over the last couple of lines. The Mishnah, the Braisa had said the keresh, that the keresh, af b'she'en the keren achas, even though it has only one horn, mutter, is still mutter, it's a kosher animal. So, Omer of Yehuda, what is keresh? Tavya de Be'iloi is the deer of Be'iloi. Be'iloi literally means the higher place. Rashi says it's the name of a forest. So the keresh is that creature. And also, you should know, by the way, another creature that lives in that area is tigris, or tigris, maybe like the word tiger in English, is Aryeh de Be'iloi, is the lion of Be'iloi. Where does it say anything about the tigris? Rashi says, I have no idea. One of the Mephoshim, the Tiferes Yaakov, explains the point of the Gemara bringing it. First of all, we're going to have a story involving it now, involving this Aryeh de Be'iloi, but more to the point is the Gemara wants to establish for us, you're going to wonder, wait, how could the Keresh be a kosher animal? It's not listed in the Torah. The Torah lists 10 species of kosher animals, and the Keresh is not among them. So the answer is that each of the types that it mentions in the Torah, each of the species includes many different subspecies. We're going to have a similar thing later in the parak. As far as birds, so when the Torah mentions tzvi, and we talked about yesterday, was it tzvi? Is it a deer? Is it a gazelle? Etc. So the word tzvi includes various subspecies, one of them being this Tavya de Be'iloi, even though it's much larger than any known one. As Gemara is going to give the size of it in a moment. Nevertheless, it's still counts under the definition of tzvi, and that is the same thing that you see, that there are different kinds of lions in the world, one of them being this gigantic Aryeh de Be'iloi, and they still all bear the same name of lion. Okay, so how big are these creatures? I'm going to kind of teisha amhosa have been una la una de Aryeh de Be'iloi. The Aryeh de Be'iloi, this is a gigantic lion, there are 9 amas between one ear and the other of it. So nine amas would be somewhere around 15 feet, give or take. So you're talking about a very large animal. Rabbi Yosef says, Shitzer Amhosa have been mashed to the Tavya de Be'iloi. As far as the deer of Be'iloi, this Keresh that we just said, the length of it is 16 amas. 16 amas would be around 25 to 30 feet. What is the keresh? So what is the keresh in particular? So you have a couple of different achronim discuss it. Some of them want to say that the keresh would be the rhinoceros. We said that it has one horn, and a rhinoceros has a horn on its nose. On the other hand, though, they point out it doesn't have any of the other simonim of a kosher animal, and it's very clear from our Gemara over here that it's kosher. So that can't really be it. So there was an interesting, Sichas Kolin makes an interesting point that it may be the giraffe. A giraffe doesn't really have horns, but it has little protrusions on top of its head. Sometimes you have one of them, and you have two little bumps, and then between them you have another one which also resembles a horn. So in that sense, it can be said to have one horn. So, in fact, the French word that Rashi uses to translate teresh is would be a creature, would be some kind of creature that has spots, that has brown spots all over its body, which matches a giraffe, and a giraffe would indeed be long enough to match what the Gemara is saying over here, about 16 amos long. Okay, in any case, I mean, it is generally accepted that the giraffe is a kosher animal. There's a popular notion that some people have, that we don't eat giraffes because you don't know where to shecht it. That's not true, based on what we learned earlier in our Masechta, about the dinim of the area where you can shecht. There's plenty of room on a giraffe's neck to shecht it. All it is giraffes are somewhat endangered, and they're not exactly found in civilized areas. It's outside of zoos, and the meat of them is not especially palatable, but nevertheless, they are still, it does seem they are kosher animals. If you say, like we said before, that an animal needs a masurda, then you might have a question on it, because there's no actual practical masurda on giraffes being kosher, but nevertheless, in principle, they may be kosher. Okay, having mentioned the Arya de Beiloi, the Gemara tells a story involving it. The Roman emperor says to Rabbi Shurban Chananya, but we have various places in Shas and the Midrashim where the emperor, generally it was Adrian, has discussions with Rabbi Yeshua. Some say that this was after he became emperor. Some say it was during the time when he was governor of Syria, which at that time included Eretz Yisrael. So in that case, then he would have had an opportunity to talk with Rabbi Yeshua. Anyway, he says, Elokechem ke'aryeh mosel. Your God is compared in the pasuk to a lion. The pasuk says, Aryeh shog milo yira. The lion has roared, who would not fear? In the same way, the Navi continues, when Hashem speaks, anybody who's sensitive to, well, of course, is going to prophesy. Milo yinovi, who could not prophesy? So the point is, in other words, that Hashem's voice is being compared to the roar of a lion. So the emperor says, what's the big deal? My Rebuse, what's so great about that? Parasha, Kotel Arya, after all, a horseman can kill a lion. So in that case, then what's the point of comparison? Meaning, in other words, Marsha says that this caser denied the idea that Hashem has the ultimate power. He claimed that there are those who have more power than Hashem, as you see with the Nimshel, that a horseman can kill a lion. Hashem is not being compared to an ordinary lion, but rather to Arya de Beiloi muscle, is being compared to this Arya de Beiloi, this oversized, gigantic lion that we were just talking about. Omalei, so the emperor says, fine, but in a domestic leni ali. Fine, I want you to show me, I want to see this creature for myself. Omalei, like Moses Chazis, so the Yeshua says, you're not going to be able to see it. Omalei, the emperor says, Ibra Chazina, nevertheless, Ibra means MS, and it's true, means no matter what, I want to see it, and it's your job to show it to me. Okay. Bor Rachmi, so Rabbi Yeshua davened for Rachmanus from Hashem, that he should allow the Arya de Beiloi to come, so the emperor can see him. And so the Arya de Beiloi is sort of leaving its place and heading towards Rome. Here it sounds like we're saying there's only one of them. I mean, you would think that it's a whole herd of them, it's a whole pride of lions or whatever. But here the Gemara seems to be assuming that there was one particular one. Anyway. He had a marked Aramea parasi when it was 400 parasa away from Rome, which is like 900 miles. Niham chad kola, it gave forth one roar, and it was so powerful, the sound of it. Afila kol ma'abarta v'shurda d'rimi nochal. All the pregnant women in Rome miscarried, and the wall of Rome itself fell down. So just from the creature's roar from 400 parasa away. Then it came 300 parasa away. It roared again. And the men's kochi and shini started falling out. Now kochi and shini, in some places, Rashi understands that kochi means the gums and shini means the teeth. However, Tosfos points out over here, that wouldn't it be? The gums don't fall out. Rather, Tosfos explains that kochi v'shini would mean the molars, and shini would mean the front teeth. So here you have that the first time this creature roared, it had such an effect on the walls and on the women, and now the second time it roared, it had an effect even on the men, and their teeth are falling out. The afu nofel mikursi la'ara, even he, the emperor himself, fell off his throne onto the ground from the force of this creature's roar. So why 400 and 300? Ben Yoyoda gives explanations. Api Kabbalah about Gematrios. Anyway, so now the emperor himself fell off his throne. Omalesi says to the Bishop, Matus Mina had plead with you, Boy Rachmi Alei Davin for Rachmanos, for that this creature, to La Hebel Duchte, that it should go back to its place. If even 300 pirates are away, we can't take its roaring, how much more so if we see it in person? Bar Rachmi Alei, sure enough, Rabbi Yeshua Davin for Rachmanos for it, for Adva Adole Lasser, and returned it to its place, and that was the end of that. So now the emperor knows that, no, when we talk about Hashem being like a lion, we mean like this kind of lion, and much greater, even. We're even from hundreds of pirates away. You can't tolerate him. So don't think you're going to be able to overpower Hashem. Next, another story in this connection. So he says to the emperor, I want to see your God. Now, Marshall explains that what it is after the guy now had realized that Hashem has the ultimate power, so now he says, fine, I believe he exists, I believe he has power, but now still I want to be able to contemplate and to understand what he really is. On the other hand, Lev Arya points out that the stories may be told here out of order. The Gemara had first brought the story with the Arya de Beiloi because it's connected to the previous Gemara. Now, the Gemara is telling about other stories out of order. So, in other words, you could say that first, I think we're going to have a story soon where he wanted to invite Hashem to a party. He had the notion that Hashem is like a human being who eats and drinks. Now, after that failed, as we'll see soon, then he wants to at least see Hashem, and that doesn't work either. Then he thinks that at least he wants to see the lion that Hashem is compared to. So according to that, then the stories would be told in the reverse order. But according to Marsha, they're actually in order. Having realized that Hashem has the ultimate power, now at least he wants to be able to contemplate and explain, understand what Hashem really is. Anyway, on the later, Rabbi Shua says, "Loi matzis chazis loi." You're not going to be able to see Hashem. But the pasuk says, "Kilo yirani hodem b'choy." Nobody can see Hashem and live. Omalei, so again, the emperor says, Ibra, in truth, chazinalei. I'm going to see him, meaning I'm going to see him no matter what. You better make it happen. Fine. Ozal oitmi lahadiyem ebit kufas tamuz. So Rabbi Shua went and had the emperor stand outside in front of his son in kufas tamuz in the summer season when the sun is in its beating down its full strength. Omalei stafu bay, he says to the emperor, take a look at the sun. Omalei lemasina, the emperor says, I can't. Amalei, so Rabbi Shua says, Yoima, think of it, the daylight, meaning the day, the sun, the chad mishamoshi, the kind of kamekutabrihu, this is only one of the servants that stand before Hashem, Amrit, and you're saying, I can't look at it, Shechina, like Koshkin, how much more so, you're not going to be able to see the Shechina. On the face of it, then we're talking about that the guy wanted to actually see Hashem, and Rabbi Shua says if he can't even look up directly at the sun, how much more so he can't look directly at Hashem. Marsha, in keeping with his explanation, explains that also the emperor was saying, I want to be able to at least fully understand what Hashem is. And then Rabbi Shua says, you know what, even the great scientists and philosophers don't fully understand how the sun works. So what makes you think you'd be able to understand the infinite Hashem? Okay. Omale case of Rabbi Shimon Chananya, another time the same emperor says to Rabbi Shimon Chananya, but in the itzbis le namal elekaihu, I want to make a banquet for your God. Namal literally means bread, but in other words, I want to make a banquet for him. Hashem is, he didn't believe that Hashem is infinite and that Hashem is not like a human being who doesn't eat and drink. He has the notion that if Hashem does things in the world, like we just said, the sun. So look, the sun, you don't fully understand it, but it's still a physical being. So therefore, he takes the view then that maybe Hashem is a physical being as well, and therefore that he can give him food just like you give to a human being. Yoda gives a different explanation. He thinks he's going to prepare it for the malachim. In any case, Amalei Lone loves this, and again, Rabbi Shua says you're not going to be able to. The emperor says, Amai, and why not? And Rabbi Shua says, Nefishi Chelevos, that Hashem has many soldiers. So it's not just going to be a banquet for Hashem, it's going to be for all of his soldiers, all of his dependents as well, and you're not going to be able to manage for all of them. Omalei, again, the emperor is stubborn. Ibra, nevertheless, I'm going to do it. Omalei, so fine, so Rabbi Shua says to him, Puk Sovis Legida Dervisa, fine, go set up your banquet on the banks of the Revisa. The Revisa is the name of a river that has very wide banks. The Revisa Alma is a very, very wide space over there, so there you'll have room for Hashem's whole entourage. So, Tordach Shita Yarchikaita. So the emperor was working over there and preparing the banquet throughout the 6 months of the summer. And then 6 months passed, also Zika, along came a wind, Kanshe Liyama, and swept everything that had been prepared into the sea, or into the river, and into the sea. So it's all gone. Well, he still didn't give up yet. Torach, Shita, Yarche, the Sitva. So he worked and started preparing another banquet for the 6 months of the winter time. Also Mitra, then came a rainstorm, Tabe Liyama, and drowned the whole thing in the sea. Amalei, so the emperor says to the Bishra, my high, what's going on over here? Why, every time I'm trying to make a banquet for Hashem, it's getting wound. Amalei, so the Bishra says that wasn't even Hashem himself yet. Hani knushoi uzluchoi. Hani knushoi. This was, you have the people who come and sweep. When you have a banquet, you're going to have you have a king coming, you have people sweeping the place ahead of him. Zluchoi, and you have the people who sprinkle water to lay down the dust. So they came first, the Osu Kameh, that they came before him to prepare the area for Hashem, and then while they're there, they took their portion of the food. So in other words, Rabbi Yeshua is telling him the wind and the rain are Hashem's shluchim. They're so to speak, like preparing the way for Hashem. So the emperor says, Yehochi lematzina. Fine, in that case, then you're right, I give up, I'm not going to be able to do such a thing. Obviously, I shouldn't think that Hashem is gashmi a stick like I was thinking. So because Hashem, of course, is far beyond that. Again, Ben Yehoyada explains that it means, in other words, he is trying to prepare for the malachim, but nevertheless, Rabbi Yeshua is telling him even the malachim, even the malachim are more powerful than you can imagine, and this wasn't even a natural windstorm or a natural rainstorm. This was especially that the malachim came to prepare for Hashem, and then you can't even withstand them. Okay. Next, Amalei Baskes, the Rabbi Shurban Chananya, the daughter of the emperor, Bapashas, the same emperor, says to the Shurban Chananya, she also has her mistaken notions of what Hashem is. And of course, you know, all these guys, but they're Goyish Akef, you know, they grew up on Avodah Zarah. They're used to their gods being representable in human form or in animal form, and them having only certain limited powers, and then they're opposed by other ones, v'chola, as we know from all of their mythologies and all that nonsense of theirs. So of course, you know, they conceived of Hashem in those terms as well. So now this daughter of the emperor says to the Bishurman, or the princess says to the Bishurman Chananya, Elekecha Nagrohu. Now look, your God apparently is a carpenter. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, Makor b'mayim al Yosef, Hashem roofs his upper chambers with water, meaning that Hashem created the heavens and has the mayim al yonim, the mayim Hashem al rakia, the water is up there. And the pasuk compares it to as if Hashem built a building and uses the water as the roof beams for it. So she says that Hashem is a carpenter. So she says, tell Hashem, tell your God to make me a spool for thread. That's the kind of thing that a carpenter would make. So in other words, the point is that now, here we had, you know, the emperor at first thought that Hashem is limited in power and was shown with the Aya de Beiloi that not. He thought that Hashem is... that he can at least understand what Hashem is, and he's shown with the sun that he can't. He thinks that Hashem is a gashmiistic creature, and he's shown with the story, with the banquet, that not. Now this emperor's daughter disbelieves in Ashgacha Pratis. She thinks that Hashem is just up there in Shemayim. He built his upper stories over there like a carpenter, and he's not directly involved with things on earth. So in that case, she like mocks Hashem and says, so let him make me one spool, let him make me one thing down here on earth. So he says to her, so Rabbi Yeshua says, l'chai, very well, I will ask Hashem for that. Bar rachmi Allah, so he daven for rachmanas on her, v'inga, she got saras. Now, how does that help as far as a spool? And then she was made to stand, or sit, whatever, but to be out in the streets of Rome with a spool, where she would wind threads onto it. To have a nehigi, this was the custom in Rome, to call the minga, anybody in Rome who got saras, whether it means, doesn't necessarily mean saras of the Torah, it may mean what in modern medicine is called leprosy, it may mean some other kind of skin disease like that, whatever the custom was, anybody in Rome that got this disease, yavu le misterisa, they would give him a spool, but Yosef Ashukov, a saucer dolily, And he would sit in the market and unwind thread from one spool onto another. And why they do that? This is an unusual kind of thing. He hated the lechso inchi, the libu rachmei alei. This way, people would see somebody doing that, and they would realize this person has been stricken with tzaras, and they would go and daven for them. So that was the custom in Rome, that they had this way of identifying the mitzaroyim by giving them this kind of job. So she, even though she's the princess, they still had her do the same kind of thing. Yom Echad have a kachol of chosim. One day, Rabbi Yeshua passes by over there. Havas Yosef, Sasri Dolly, Bishuka Deremoi, and she's doing over there and doing that and sitting over there and unwinding the thread from one spool onto another. Omalah, so Rabbi Yeshua says, Shapirta, Misterisa, Diyav Locha Lekai. So what do you say? Isn't it a good spool that my God gave you? Omrulay, so the princess says, she still doesn't realize the mistake he made. She's still proud and stubborn about it. She just says, Emalay lele kofta lishko mai diyavli. Tell you God to take away what he gave to me. Omrulay, so the Yeshua says, Elekodidun, mehav yohiv mishkal leshokil. Our God takes, but he doesn't give. So, or the other way around, gives, but he doesn't take back. So Hashem gave you that at your request. That's not the way you wanted it, but you asked for it, so it's what you got. Hashem doesn't take things back so easily. So in other words, the point is that now she learns the concept of Hashgacha Pratis. She thinks that Hashem doesn't control things down here on earth. She sees that Hashem very well controls Hashgacha Pratis, and she was chutzpahdik to Hashem and wanted a spool, and she gets a spool. Ben Yehoyada goes on in greater detail that the winding threads from one spool onto another represents how Hashem winds things and spools things in the world and makes things one thing causes another, and a whole series of causes and effects, and she still doesn't get the hint. She finally says, Ben Yehoyada says, fine, I understand that Hashem makes one thing happen as a result of another, but why did it have to be? Why did it have to be in this negative way that I became a Mitzeras? And he says, look, you know, this is how it is. Hashem decides how things are going to happen, sometimes in a good way and not such a good way. Actually, Ben Yehoyada learns that he did daven for her, and he was cured, and she was cured because of honor for the government. But then the Gemara doesn't say that. All right. So that's a series of stories with Rabbi Yehuda, with Rabbi Yeshua and the emperor. And again, we came into it by way of this Aryeh DeBeiloi. Going back now to animals, talking about the simonym of different kinds of animals. We talked about that before, the simonym of domestic versus wild animals. So now let's talk about within domestic animals themselves. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, sure. An ox, parasiton, it usually has a big stomach, or parasiton, and it has wide hooves, rounded hooves. Rav Reshe, why is this relevant? We'll see in a second. Rav Reshe, it has a big head. The Rav Gnuvte, it has a big tail, long tail. The Chilufa Bechamra, all of those things are exactly the opposite when it comes to a donkey, that it has it's a much scrawnier animal. And it has more pointed hooves, and a smaller head and a smaller tail. As far as the tail of the ox, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that the reason why cattle, Hashem gave them long tails is because they often graze in the meadows where there's lots of flies and mosquitoes and whatever, so it can use its tail to swish them away. In any case. So you should know, you should be able to recognize on sight the difference between a shur and a chamer. So the Gemara says, l'may nafkamina, what's the practical difference to know one way or the other? And the answer is l'mekach u'memker, as far as buying and selling. If you're selling somebody an ox, then you should make sure, that it has those characteristics. And if not, then the guy can argue it's a mekach tos that he bought the wrong kind of thing. And for that matter, if you're buying, then be careful to look out for this kind of thing and be aware what you're getting. Now, the point Rashi mentions in a couple of lines in connection with the next piece of the Gemara, that the Gemara tells us, shur ben yoyme, kor shur, that a male cattle can be called a shur even on the day it's born. Nevertheless, in Loshon Me'odem, a shur means a mature animal, and therefore, and it has those characteristics, so you can't sell somebody a shur and then later on say, but the Torah says that a shur means even a day old animal. No, it has to be a mature animal that has these characteristics. And vice versa with a junkie. Okay. more about oxen. The ox that Adam Rishon brought as a korban, the Gemara tells us in Avodah Zarah that when at first Adam was worried, the days seem to be getting shorter, night is falling, and maybe it means Hashem is going to destroy the world because of the chet etzadas. Then he realized the days are getting longer, and there's daytime after nighttime, and he realized this is just the cycle that Hashem set up the world with. So he was so grateful to Hashem that he brought a korban. So that korban, that ox that he brought as a korban, keren achas hoisel b'mitzvay. It had one horn on its forehead. Before we mentioned the keresh, which has one horn, but here we had a one-time thing where there was an ox that had one horn in its forehead. Among other things, representing the point that here when Adam did the chet etzadas, and it means that he, in a certain sense, believed that there's more power than there's more than one power in the world. Chas v'shalom. In fact, earlier in Masechta Sanhedrin, the Gemara says that he was minhoya. So now when he did tshuva, he's bringing an ox that has one horn, representing that he believes in the total actors of Hashem, and none of this idea of that there could possibly be more than one power in Hashem than Hashem. So there's that. Kosev and Ein Yaakov brings from the Rashba of a similar idea that it means that he followed what he wanted rather than what he's right. So now he's showing that the korban has only one horn, that now from now on he's going to stay on the straight path and not go against what Hashem says. In fact, the Rashba says, for the same reason, the Tachash that was used for building the Mishkan also had one horn to also represent this idea. After the Chet Egel, we also need that constant reminder to keep on the one straight path of Hashem. Anyway, so it had one horn. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, David asks that my tefillah should be accepted by Hashem. This Sitav L'Hashem Mishur, this was in yesterday Tillim. The sitav Hashem mishur per made my tefillah be better and more acceptable than Hashem mishur per, more than a sure par. Now sure, like we just said, can mean an animal on the day that it's born. On the other hand, par means an animal in its third year. So what is it? Is it a sure? Is it a par? So it means this is an animal that had just been created. It was only on the day it was born. So it's on the day it was created. So it's called sure, because all the animals were created on the sixth day together, right before Adam edition, but it's also, it's fully grown like a par, because as the Gemara is going to say, all the creatures were created fully grown. And David said, makrin mafris, that has a horn and a hoof. So the word makrin implies that it has one horn. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Makrin tarki mashma. The word makrin suggests that it has a normal number of horns, two horns. So Amar of Nachman Mikeren Ksiv. Yes, but it's written in the pasuk without the yud, and therefore it can be read as if the word was Mikeren from a horn, and therefore we can doubt, and that it means that this is a creature that in fact had only one horn rather than the normal two. And again, with the idea being again that the one horn represents that now he's going to believe exclusively in Hashem and nobody else, and he's going to follow exclusively the way of Hashem and nothing else. And then Yada brings up Kabbalah, that it means that now, like this, you have normally a creature has two horns, one on the right side for Chesed and one on the left side for Gvura. So now Hashem is giving him this kind of animal to represent to him that now he'll be able to have a blend between Chesed and Gvura, and Hashem will deal with him in that way of Rachmin. The Amr of Yehuda, also of Yehuda, says in this connection, Shoshihig of Adam Rishon, this ox that Adam brought as a korban, kind of kodmus laparsoisim, its horns came before its hooves. When Hashem says that the earth should give forth living creatures, then it means they actually sprouted forth from the ground. So now, what happens when a baby is born, for example? So first the head comes out, usually. So in the same way, then the heads of the animals came out first. Hashem says, Totzeh Eretz, Nefesh Chaya Lamina, and immediately all the different kinds of land animals started sprouting forth from the ground. And then, so you have each one of them, their head comes out, and later on, within a couple of seconds, their entire body comes out, like when a creature is born. So now, the horns of this ox came out of the ground before its hooves. As opposed to, now in other words, most oxen are usually born with, most cattle are born without horns, and the horns develop only later. But here, whereas the Gemara is going to say now, the animals were created fully grown, and Adam and Chava were also, and everything else was created fully grown, then it already had horns when it was created.
Shenemar, the same passage with Sitav Hashem Mishurpar Makrin Mafris. May my Ketubah be more acceptable to Hashem more than the Shurpar Makrin Mafris. So we said Makrin means that it had one horn, but in addition, why in that order? Makrin Bereisha. First it had horns, Vahodim Mafris, and then it had hooves. Because again, it came out of the ground in that way. So that very first ox that was created in the world, Adam afterwards brought it as a korban. The pastures, there were other ones, because you have to have the species of oxen continue. Either you have that first it impregnated the female, and now it's available for shechita, or you would have maybe that Hashem created to begin with many, many, many oxen and many cows. Whatever the case, so this one had its horns first, and then its hooves. And the Gemara says, Messiah, little bit, shurban lady. This point that we just said supports what Rabbi Shurban Levi says. Yom Rabbi Shurban Levi, Kol Maisa Bereshis, all the creatures that were created in Maisa Bereshis, became Mosan Nivru, they were all created with their full height. So unlike nowadays where baby animals and people are born and plants and whatever are born and they're tiny and they're small and only on later do they grow to their full height. Here, they were created with their full height. Tosfos points out it doesn't mean they were created standing up. It just means, in other words, they had their full height. The Daita Nivru, they were all created with their Das, which means that Hashem informed each one of them that they were going to be created, and they were willing, and they were willing to be created, meaning not they themselves, but the malach of each one of them. We know that everything in the world has a malach that Hashem, that the hashpa from Hashem goes through that malach to it. We have even for example, grasses, we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara. Every blade of grass has malach hamakev, oimagdal, of a malach that strikes it and tells it grow. So the same way, each kind of animal has its own kind of malach. And those malachim, each one agreed that this animal should be created with this form and this characteristic, except for Daitan Nivru, but Sivyonim Nivru, and they were all created, but Sivyonim in the form that they chose for themselves. So in other words, Hashem like gave them a choice. Do you want to be in this form or in this form? And each of them chose their form that they were created. Ben Yehoyada points out the word Sivyo, you take these letters, you take these words and rearrange the letters of them. Kaimosam, Daitam, Sivyonam in reverse order spells out the word Tzedek, which represents that everything is the Tzedek, everything Hashem created justly and rightly. So Shenema, because the passage is by Chulu Hashemayim Ba'aretz V'chol Tzvam, the heavens and earth and all their hosts were completed, Al Tzukit Tzvam Elot Sivyonam. So don't read the word Tzvam, their hosts, but rather Sivyonam, their form or their beauty. So we see, in other words, that they were all created in their full beauty, in their fully formed way. Tosfos brings actually that the Aruch says that we can actually learn not just the third thing from the word Svam. First of all, why are we doubting the word Svam in the first place? Is because why mention Davkat Tzva Hashemayim Va'aretz? Hashem created everything during the 6 days of creation, so why summarize it by Chol Hashemayim Va'aretz V'chol Tzvam? So therefore, that means that all the creatures were created with Tzvam were created with Tzivyonim. Mar Shah, by the way, explains the phrases of Yehukhen Mosan, the Daitan, and Vitzurasa, and Vitzivyonim, he explains all differently. The Khen Mosan means that the fact that they that every creature has a choymer, it has the material that it was made from, the tzura, the ideal form of this creature, and the tachlis, the purpose that it was created for. So he says, kemos and daitan and sivyonim refers to those three things. Hashem, there's particular material, particular genetics that Hashem used to create each one of them. Each one has their ideal form, so not always does every individual throughout the history of that species always live up to that ideal. There are mutants and whatever after all, mutants and then ones with defects, but each of them has their ideal form, and each of them has their purpose that Hashem created it for. Tosfos brings from the Aruch that actually the word Sivyonim, the word Tzvam, we can doubt in all of them. The word Sivyonim means their beauty. So if they're beautiful, if they have their full beauty, it means that they have their full height, and it means they have their full das. Because when are they truly beautiful? Only when they're completely grown, only when they're fully grown. Also, Tosfos points out the word Tzvam can also be related to the word Mitzav, as in standing, and that would be the Chemosam, that would be their height, that they were created with their full height. Okay, so the point is, all the creatures were created fully grown, so was that ox, and therefore it came out of the ground already with horns, and then Adam brought it as a carbon. This is, by the way, of course, one of the famous answers when they talk about the age of the universe, that the universe and the earth and everything seem to be much older than they really are. One answer is that Hashem created them fully grown, as we're saying over here.
Okay.
More about Ma'aseh Bereishis. The Gemara continues. Dorash Reb Chanina bar Papa. Reb Chanina bar Papa gave a Dorasha, where the pasuk says in Tehillim, Yehi Chvoid Hashem La'olam, may the glory of Hashem be forever. Yismach Hashem b'Ma'aseh, may Hashem be happy with His works. So Reb Chanina bar Papa says, pasuk says Sar Ha'olam Omnoi. This pasuk was said by the Sar Ha'olam. Sar Ha'olam, Rashi says, means the Malach HaMamuna, the Malach that's in charge. Again, you know, we said that Hashem filters His Ashpa to the world through various Malachim, but you have like one Malach that's above all of them. Tosfos brings that from other Gemaras, it seems that this is Malach Matat. Tosfos points out there are places where it talks about that Malach Matat, his name, his full name. We don't say his full name, because in general we don't say full names of Malachim unless they're also names of people, but his full name, Matat. And then Ruin is Gematria, the same Gematria is Shin Dalad Yud. So the Gemara elsewhere says that it means that Shmoy Kashem Rabbi, his name is like the name of Hashem. You even have the story in Chagiga where Achel saw Matat sitting and writing the Schusim to the Jewish people, and he thought if a Malach is able to sit, then it means he's an independent power of his own, and so he made him a mistake of thinking that there's two gods, Hashem and Matat, Chasr Shalom. But anyway, the point is, Matat is like a top-level Malach, where all the Hashpah to the world goes through him. In Chassidus, it talks about that Matat is located in Olam HaYitzirah. So now we have all world is Olam HaAsiyah, which comes down. You have Atzilus, Driya, Yitzirah, Asiyah. So therefore, so you have to have the Hashpah comes down through those Olamas and comes through Yitzirah and then comes to all world, and so it goes through this Malach Matat. So Tosfos points out that there are other places where it seems, where it talks about the idea that Chanoich, the seventh generation from Adam, where it says he went up to Shemayim, Kilokach Oisei Elokim, that he became Malach Matat, that here it seems that he was around already at Ma'aseh Bereishis. So Tosfos discusses there can be different midrashim. So Sar Ha'olam Matat, or whoever it is, said this pasuk. But Omri, he said it. What happened? The Shasha Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Minehu Beilonis. Hashem tells the trees that all of them should come out of the ground, the Minehu, according to their kind. Meaning that Hashem, that there should be different species of trees, and they shouldn't interbreed. So now, earlier in the Loshana Pasuk is, Hashem says, Tad Sheh Oretz Desha, the earth should be covered with greenery, Esev Mazriya Zera, herbs or grasses that produce seed, eight pre osa fibamino, fruit trees that produce fruit according to their kind. So now, by the trees, it mentions lamino. By the asev, it doesn't say anything about lamino. So as far as the way Hashem gave the command, the grasses and the herbs could come out all mixed together. But Nasir Bishoyim, Kavachoyim of Atzman, the grasses and the herbs, again, the Malach in charge of them, made a Kavachoyim for themselves. They said, if Hashem wanted mixtures, Loma Omer, Lamineu be Lonis, then why would He have told the trees that they need to be Lamineu? Actually. But oi Kavachoyim, and furthermore, they realized that Kavachoyim, Oma Ilonis, Shain Darkan, Losis, Bubia, trees, after all, are large. They don't naturally mix together. Each tree is a big thing, and has lots of branches. They don't tend to grow one right next to the other. Even sometimes, yeah, the trees will grow close together, but nevertheless, the branches tend to stay apart and not get blended together. And nevertheless, Omar Akash Brochu Leminehu, and yet Hashem says that they should be Leminehu. Onu, so then we herbs, which are tiny little things, a large number of herbs and grasses, and they tend to grow very quickly and tend to grow in mixtures. Onu, alakas kamakama, how much more so that we should be coming out separately and have a distance between one and the other and not forcefully. Sure enough, miyad kovachavach had yotzal aminoi. So now every grass came out of its own kind, not mixing with the others. And thus the next pasuk says that the earth gave forth desha, a covering of greenery, esed mazriya zera laminehu, grasses that produce seed according to their kind. So in fact, they did come out distinct. Pasuk sara olam. So now the sara olam, the malach, starts and says the pasuk, yihi chvod Hashem la'olam, may the glory of Hashem be forever. Yismach Hashem b'maisav, may Hashem be happy with His works. That his works, that even His lowly works, the grasses, are so careful with the honor of Hashem and so careful to follow what Hashem what Hashem says, even what Hashem implies. So therefore, that's a great thing, and then Hashem deserves praise, and Hashem deserves praise for that kind of thing. So in fact, Rav Shamshon Afol Hirsch has in a bunch of places in his Perushim that really the whole mitzvah of Kilayim is all based on this point. Hashem created the earth and everything on it to begin with, Luminehu, that every species should be by itself and not be mixed together. And therefore, anytime a person does Kilayim of any kind, Kilay Behema, Kilay Zeroyim, etc., then he's undoing that, and that's against what Hashem wants for the world. In fact, the Gemara mentions, we're currently in Ein Yaakov, between Mincha Ma'ariv, we're learning about this, we started learning yesterday, that Shev Mitzvah Menoyach, and there's an opinion that Goyim are also in certain types of Kilayim as well. That's not the halacha, but nevertheless there is such a concept. Actually, that is the halacha that Rambam says they are also in certain, they're also to cross breed animals, and they're also to cross graft trees. So even Goyim, even the Umos HaOlam, have a responsibility to keep that, to keep those distinctions in Hashem's world intact. Okay. So in this connection, the Gemara says Boyer Ravina. So Ravina has a question. So we're speaking of grasses and the herbs growing separately. According to Rav Chanina bar Papa, who says that the grasses were not told to come out separately, but they did so anyway on their own. So according to him, would there be an issue to cross graft two kinds of grasses or two kinds of herbs together? Now, Tosfos points out there is the Mishnah in Kilayim tells us that you're not allowed to mix two different types of vegetables. So what's the question? Of course you're not allowed to. So first Tosfos says maybe in Chutz La'aretz, where you allow to plant Kilay Zeroyim in Chutz La'aretz. So the question is, according to Rav Chanina bar Papa, would in Chutz La'aretz you're not allowed to graft trees, but you are allowed to plant different kinds of vegetables together. So now the question would be, according to Rav Chanina bar Papa, the question is, given that after all they did come out Laminehu, according to his Joshua, so maybe the same din would apply to herbs and Chutz La'aretz as they would to trees, and you wouldn't be allowed to force graft them either. Then Tosfos says the question can even be in Eretz Yisrael, and maybe certain other Kalai Zeroyim, and maybe about Bnei Noyach. Again, we just said that Bnei Noyach, according to one opinion, and this is brought Lahalacha, are not allowed to do Kalayim. So Tosfos has several different ways of understanding what exactly the question is. Meaning the Maharam Shif explains, without Rav Chanina bar Papa's drasha, you would have said, when it says Laminehu, refers to both of them, and the Dishoyim didn't come up with anything, with any idea of their own. You would say, it's set up by the trees, and we understand that it applies to all of them. But now that Rav Chanina bar Papa is saying that, no, Hashem didn't even give that instruction in the first place. The Dishoyim, the herbs, came up with this idea on their own. The Malach of them came up with the idea on his own. Then therefore, would that have an implication for the dinim of Kilay Zeroyim? So the question is, given the way Kosebo Laminehu, since it doesn't say that they were supposed to come out Laminehu Loy Mechayev, then maybe you're not Chayev if you plant two types of herbs together, or cross graft two different types of herbs. Or Duma, given the Askim Ayadayahu, maybe since Hashem consented after they came out Laminehu and Hashem was pleased with it, commanded Kosebo Laminehu Damna, maybe it's considered as though it says Laminehu. And the Moses Teiku, we have to leave that question unresolved. So in practice, again, you do have dinim about, you're not allowed to force graft or plant together vegetables, but you do have different dinim about that are different to some extent in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz La'aretz and various other details like that. Okay. Another drosha having to do with Maisa Bereshis. So the Gemara says, Rav Shimon ben Pazi Yidron. Rav Shimon ben Pazi pointed out a seeming contradiction in the psukim. Siva Yasa became a Shnei Meres Hagogim. First, the pasuk says Hashem created the two great luminaries. Now, two great luminaries implies that they are equal in size. And then the pasuk continues. As Amora Godolam, Amshallah said, as Amora Godolam, as Amora Kadam. Hashem created the great luminary, the sun, to rule by day, and the small luminary, the moon, to rule by night. So implying that the sun is larger than the moon. So now you have the famous thing, Omer Yireach Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the moon said before Hashem, Ribono Shel Olam, Efshel Shnei Melachim Sheishtam Shebekeser Echad, how could two kings use the same crown? So how is it right that I and the sun should be exactly the same size? Amalah, so Hashem says, fine, l'chiyu mati asatzmech, go make yourself smaller. And so the moon is in fact smaller than the sun, and it also waxes and wanes. Omer l'chonav, so the moon says to Hashem, by the way, Tosfos points out an interesting grammatical point. In Loshen of Tanakh, the word for moon, yereach, is masculine. But here in the Gemara, we're putting it in feminine form. For one thing, so we're saying yereach over here. Sometimes you also call the word by the moon by the word levona, which is in feminine. So now we're using the word yereach as though it was feminine as well. Anyway, so the moon says to Hashem, just because I said something a proper idea before you, amitas asmi, am I supposed to be punished therefore, and I should have to reduce myself? Maram Shib says, make the sun bigger, or we'll take turns. Each one of us will do a different month or something, or something like that. Omalah, so Hashem tells the moon, l'chiyu mashur b'yom v'alayla. You know what? Go, and you'll be appeased by this. You're going to rule by day and by night. Because, you know, sometimes, yeah, the sun is never visible at night, but the moon sometimes is visible by day, so therefore, so you have an advantage over the sun in that. So the moon says, what's the big deal about that? Like the expression, what good does a candle do in the middle of the day? So if I'm fine, I'm visible in the sky sometimes by day, but my light is washed out by the light of the sun, so what good does that do? Hashem says, fine, zil, but go, you're going to have to make yourself smaller, and you're going to have to wax and wane anyway. Limna b'chisro, yomim b'shonim, the Jewish people will use you to count their days and their months. Because the Jewish calendar goes according to our calendar goes according to the moon. Omrelay, so the moon says, Yoimanami, but after all, the sun also has a mile EF, should like monobates for Fusa. After all, they're going to use it also to calculate its Kufus, the seasons of the year, which is Negea as far as declaring when there's an Ibuyo, it depends on the sun, because that's how our calendar is. We have lunar months, we have solar years. If given, after all, the pasuk says, "V'hoyu, they will be the sun and the moon, la'osis for signs, or the moyadim and for yomim tovim, or the yomim and for days, v'shanim and for years." So we see that the sun and moon are both being used to determine the days and the years. So what's my advantage that I'm going to be used for that purpose? So Hashem says, zil, go, you're still going to have to do what I said, likud tzaddiki b'shmach, but the tzaddikim will be called by your name. You're going to be small, and you're going to see that you have tzaddikim, and later generations are also called small. Yaakov HaKatan, you have, for example, Yaakov is called small. You have a pasuk where the Navi says, mi yokum Yaakov, who's going to stand up on behalf of Yaakov, he katan who, because he's small. Another example, Shmuel HaKatan, the famous Tana Shmuel HaKatan. Another example, David HaKatan. David is described as the Katan, as the younger one among his brothers. He actually had one younger brother, but the pasuk refers to him as the David Hu HaKatan. He was the small one. Meaning all of them. It means they were small, not necessarily in age, but some of them were. Yaakov was a younger brother to Esav, for example. David was a younger brother to his siblings, but it means they were small, as in they were hungry. So you're going to be small, and they're going to take after you and also be small. So Hashem saw that the moon is still not appeased even with all of that. So now, so Hashem says to the Jewish people in future generations, bring a kapara on my behalf, bring a korban for a kapara for me every month that I diminish the moon in size. This explains what Reb Shimon Lakish says. What's different about the goat that's brought as a korban on Rosh Chodesh? Now, Rosh Chodesh and all Yom Tovim, you bring along with the korban and Musafim, you have a goat brought as a chatas. But by all of them, it just says they bring as a chatas only by the Rosh Chodesh. Does it say, Shenem Abay, Lashem? Does it say that you bring a goat as a chatas Lashem? Now, all korbanos are addressed to Hashem. So why does it specifically say Lashem? So the Shlokish says, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it means Hashem says, Sir Zeh, Yehei Kapora Alai, Shemi Ati Yasei Reah. This goat will be a kapora for me that I diminish the moon. Now, what does that mean? Does Hashem need a kapora? And what's going on with this whole story? So there's an enormous number, of course, every darshan and every generation since the Gemara has been written as explanations of what's going on over here. So one thing is, a number of Mephoshim make the point that the moon is a symbol of the Jewish people. That's what we said at the end, that we count our months according to the moon and tzedikim are compared to the moon. So the moon is a symbol of the Jewish people. The Gemara mentions in other places that, for example, the same way as the moon waxes and wanes all the time, the same way we Jewish people, we go through our ups and downs, but we're always there. Unlike the Goyim, are compared to the sun. They have their period of brilliance and domination, and then they disappear from history, and that's the end of them. So now Hashem says to the moon, you're going to be, because you're going to have to wax and wane, you're going to be diminished, which is a symbol of the Jewish people and their ups and downs and their vicissitudes throughout Gauls. You're going to be in this, you're going to be not just, as Hashem tells the moon, you're going to be not just by night, but also by day, meaning that you're going to have in both worlds, you'll be humble, you Jewish people will be humble in this world, and you'll have both in Olam Hazeh, which is like night, and in Olam Habah, which is by day. And they go back and forth. Hashem is telling them all the different things that you're going to have the advantage over the Goyim. And each one we point out that after all they seem to have an advantage in that thing as well. So eventually Hashem is saying that the Sur of Rosh Chodesh will be a kapara for me, meaning in other words, where a Sur, Marsha says, represents Edom. So, and Edom is always the opponent of the Jewish people. So we weaken his power on Rosh Chodesh and represent the point that sometimes we Jewish people do have domination and do have rulership in this world, just like the moon sometimes is larger and sometimes smaller. So the same way, in other words, Hashem is saying, like this, in other words, Hashem is saying, maybe what it should be is the Jewish people should not have any power or anything in this world, only in the next world. But after this whole discussion, Hashem says, no, havio kapara alai, bring a kapara on me. And I will actually make it that even in this world, sometimes you will be able to overpower Edom and have a rulership of your own. Foshim explained, the Rif, for example, explains that what it means is that it means we bring a korban for our Avedis. We're the ones who need kapara. So therefore we say that Havio kapara alai, in other words, bring a kapara for yourselves, but it's to a certain extent on my behalf, because I made all this happen by diminishing the moon. In Chassidus, it talks about the idea that in general, this whole point of the moon waxing and waning and diminishing and disappearing and reappearing all represents that the moon is a makabel. The moon, after all, receives its light from the sun. It doesn't have its own independent light. So the whole back and forth between Hashem and the moon, therefore, is that the moon is saying, why do I have to be a makabel? Why do I have to be receiving all the time? And so Hashem goes through this whole thing. Being a makabel can be a very great thing. But Hashem says, Havio kapara alai, so to speak, bring a kapara for me. Did I have to make the world in the first place that there actually mashpia and makabelin? Couldn't everybody be a mashpia and never have to be a makabel? So therefore, Hashem says, bring a kapara for me. In other words, we have to re-recognize every month that this is Hashem created the world with that purpose. But nevertheless, it's hard for us to understand, and Hashem, so to speak, commiserates with us that we have to be in that situation. Next, another thing with Maisa Bereishis, Rav Asi pointed out another seeming contradiction in the story of Maisa Bereishis. On the third day of the week, it says that Hashem said the earth should give forth greenery. But then in Perek Beis, it says, on the sixth day, when Adam is created, because Perek Beis is focusing on Adam's creation, it says that there were no plants of the field yet on the ground. And this is already on a Friday. So if they came out on Tuesday, then why is it on Friday they're still not there yet? So Melamed, this teaches us, should Yotzu to show him that the grasses and herbs did come out for Umdu al Pesach Karka, but they stayed, they remained by the entrance of the ground. They remained just underground and didn't actually come above ground. Adjaba Odomarishan or Grika Shalem Rachman until Odomarishan was created on Friday and saw the world needs plants, and then he davened for Rachmano so they should actually grow above ground. The Yoduk Shomim, and then rain fell for the first time, but Samchu, and they grew. In other words, until then, there was no concept of rain. Rashi mentions on the pasuk also, up till then, you had the Eid Yalam in Ha'aretz, a mist comes up from the ground and waters the whole earth. But when Adam was created, he realized the world needs rain, and he davened for rain, and then rain came out. Marsha brings in this connection, a Gemara in Tainis, that compares a Yom HaGshamim, a day of rain, is as great as a day when heaven and earth were created. Because here you have the same thing, like, so to speak, that now Adam became a partner with Hashem in creation. Until now, there's Midas Adin, and Hashem is not sending rain. Now Adam davened for Rachamim, and now you have, to begin with, when Hashem created the world, he created first with Midas Adin, and then afterwards joined Midas Rachamim with it, so now Adam, for the first time, evokes Hashem Midas Rachamim. So therefore, so now the plants grew. And the Lamdachal, this teaches you, that Hashem desires the tefillos of the tzaddikim, and therefore Hashem didn't make the grasses come out until Adam davened for rain, and then they came out. To demonstrate that Hashem wants that, that Hashem wants our contribution of tefillah. So, actually, Maharsha says that actually the Rashi on Chumash explains that everything was created on the first day, and then each day Hashem just set up each thing in its proper place. Certainly, the grasses were actually created on the first day, but they're completely underground. Now you have, on the third day, they peek out of the ground a little bit. And then Adam davens, and they fully grow when the rain falls. So, like Mara tells, in a similar vein, Rav Nachman Rav Papa, Havi Layahi Gimsa, Rav Nachman Rav Papa had a garden, Shtodi Be Bizani, he planted seeds in it, but they weren't growing. Bar Rachmi, he davened for Rachmanus, for rain, also Mitra, and rain came, but Samach, and it grew. Omar, so he says, Hainu Did Ravasi, this is like what Rav Asi says, it wasn't just enough that I planted my seeds, Hashem was waiting for my tefillos, and now the rain fell, and now my seeds will grow. Next. So that's all as far as Maaseh Bereishis. Getting back now to matters of different kinds of animals. So now, the Torah tells us that the Torah lists for us a few different kinds of non-kosher animals. The Torah lists for us four animals that have only one simen tara. And as we learned before, you have, those are the only ones, the camel, the shofan, and the arneves, hyrax and hare, or hare and rabbit, or whatever they're translated, are the only ones that are maligator, that regurgitate their food, and are not mafris parasa, but don't have fully split hooves. The camel has partially split hooves, but not fully. And the pig is the only one that has split hooves, but doesn't chew its cud. So the Torah lists the non-kosher animals in two places, in Parshas Shmini and again in Parshas Re'eh. And in Parshas Re'eh, it mentions a new concept. So in Parshas Re'eh, the phrasing in the pasuk is that you're not allowed to eat. You're not allowed to eat among the animals that chew their cud or that have split hooves. You're not allowed to eat, and it lists the four animals from Parshas Shmini, but it says in between the word hashsua. Hashsua literally means the split one. So in the simple sense, it means, you know, what the Torah is telling you, among the ones that chew their cud, or among the ones that have split hooves, the following have only one simen tara, and therefore you can't eat them, and here are the four. But now the Gemara is understanding, now the Gemara is going to darshan, the word hashsua is actually a separate creature that is being listed for the first time in Parshas Re'eh. And in fact, Rashi says on the pasuk, that's exactly why. Why did the Torah repeat itself? The Torah is very economical with words. Why would it be repeating all this list in Parshas Re'eh, if we already have it in Shmini, is because we have this new concept of the Shesua. So the Gemara says, Omer of Chonin Bar Rava, Hashesua, Beri Yibifnei Asmini. The Shesua is a creature of its own. Sheyesh L'Shnei Gabin, Shnei Shedrois, it has two backs and two spines. So what does that mean? In turn, now the Gemara doesn't elaborate over here, but there's a Gemara in, so the word Shesua means split. So there's Gemara in Nida, where you actually have a machloikas, Rav and Shmuel, what it means. Rav says it means basically a mutant animal, like Siamese twins, where it was born with a double spine. And it won't be viable, and that's why it's also. On the other hand, Shmuel over there holds that it means it's a species of its own. So the Malbim and Aksava Kabbalah, Mephoshim from the 19th century, identify it as a creature which they call Tayasu. In English, it's called a peccary. It's an animal that lives in South America, so it wouldn't have been known before the times of the Malbim or the Aksava Kabbalah. But here, according to them, the Gemara is referring to it over here. It's a creature that it looks like a pig, so it also is similar to a pig. It has split hooves, but doesn't chew its cud, but it has a very deep groove, cleft down its back, which makes it look like it has two backs.
So according to Shmuel, that would be the shesuah of the pasuk, and the Torah is telling you that that this creature is osur. Many years ago, I heard a vote. Somebody said that what's the significance of that this creature lives dafka in the Americas? And he says, in the old countries, sometimes there's kosher and non kosher animals, and you have kosher and non kosher people. You have people who are you have people who are frum and keep Torah and mitzvahs, and then you have the ones who went off the derech. So like, yeah, it's one or the other. Only in America do you have the kind of thing where a person can be split and bifurcated like that, where they can seem to be on one side. It seems to be a very frum kosher yid, and then meanwhile in other areas of their life they're very corrupt and everything. That's represented by this shua, by this bifurcated animal that lives only in the Americas. Anyway, so the Gemara continues. Between Moshe Rabbeinu Knigi Hoya, was Moshe a hunter that he should be able to know all the different kinds of animals? A ballistri Hoya, or was he ballistri? A ballista is a Roman catapult. So was he a catapulter who knows how to who knows how to capture animals like that? How does he know? All these creatures that people are not even familiar with? But obviously he was, because he wrote it in the Torah. So how would he know, for example, about the shesua? Especially if you say the shesua is a creature in South America. So how would he know? It shows that the Torah, this is a refutation of those who say the Torah is not Min HaShemayim. If Moshe wrote it on his own, then yeah, he couldn't possibly have known these things. And Tosfos says, even according to the opinion of Rav in the Gemara in Nida over there, that it means that it's a mutant animal. Nevertheless, Tosfos says that still maybe it only comes, it's not the kind of thing that would be born to animals that we're familiar with. It would still be from species that we're not familiar with. So if it was Moshe himself riding the Torah on his own, he couldn't possibly have known of all these animals, of all these exotic animals in different places in the world. But now, the fact that they're recorded in the Torah shows that the Torah is Min HaShemayim. Now, these words knigi and blistery and then ballistery are unusual words. They come from Greek or Latin. So Amalei Rav Chista Rav Tachlifa Bar Avina. So Rav Chista tells Rav Tachlifa Bar Avina, Zilk says knigi blistery bagadah. Go write these words of Agadah in your books of Agadah. These are nice words, loshon tzach, like a fancy language. So write them down in your books. That you should be able to say them in the future or parsha and explain in your Agadah what these words are. People are not familiar with these words, but these are nice fancy words that people should be able to know more. That's one way of explaining what Rav Chista is saying. Another way of explaining that he's saying is when you tell over the Sagadda, then use the exact words that were in it, because Chayvadim Loimah, Lashon Rabbah, you should always say things in the Lashon that you learned it from your Rebbe, so write down these words, and since they're not familiar, then write down for yourself what they mean, so that you'll be able to remember them and explain them. Okay, in a similar vein, we have another example of a drasha like that involving unusual words. So the Gemara brings like this, and Sefer Yoshua, after it goes through all of the conquests that Yoshua and the Jewish people had done of most of Eretz Yisrael, so the Pasuk mentions there were parts of Eretz Yisrael that they had not conquered. And it lists different parts of Eretz Yisrael. So it mentions Chamesh, the Ace, the S and the Pasuk, but whatever. Chamesh Sounei Plishtim, you have the five lords of the Plishtim, five main Plishti cities that they hadn't conquered. Ha'azosi of Aza, Gaza, Vashdodi, Hashkeloni, Agiti, Vahakroni, these are the five main Plishti cities, Vaha'avim, and the Avim. Now, the question is, Omer Chamesha, V'choshuv Shita. First it says Chamesha, Sounei Plishtim, but it lists six. So what's going on in the posse? So Omer of Yonison, Arunki Shalahem Chamesha. It means that their Arunki is five, meaning they're prominent ones. They're a donkey is different. A donkey is a different girsa, but whatever it means they're important ones. The prominent ones are five. The Avim are not so important, so they are plishti. They are a plishti subgroup, but they're not as important as the Chamesha Sounei Plishti. So therefore, the pasuk starts off saying five, meaning the five primary ones.
There's also a sixth one. So similarly, Omle Rav Chista Rav Chachlifa Bar Avina. So now the same thing. Rav Chista says to Rav Chachlifa Bar Avina, this word Arunki or Adunki, Marsha points out, if the word is Adunki or Adunki, then it's Meloshon Oda in Meloshon Masters. It's also a nice fancy word. Soiv Arunki Bagadach. Write down this word Arunki in your Agada. That's a nice word of Parsha, and explain. When you're giving this drasha, tell over this word, and then tell over this word. Marsha brings a different gear set, right? It being gartach, writing your letters. When people write letters, they often use fancier language. So have these words available in your vocabulary that you should be able to use them when the time comes in letters. Okay. So the Gemara says a pliga de rav. Now this explanation that we're saying that the avim are part of the plishtim, but they're not as important, and therefore they don't count among the main five, that disagrees with Rav. The Amar Rav, Avim, mi Teman bo. Rav says that Avim are not actually Plishtim, they came from Teman, which is one of the descendants of Esav. So they came from there, and they settled in this port of Eretz Yisrael. The Lomanikashman, so therefore, when we say five, in other words, so there's the Chamesh Sani Plishtim, and in addition, you also have the Avim, which are a foreign nation that settled among them. Tosfos brings a different explanation that the word Baha'avim, even though it belongs to the end of the previous pasuk, the pasuk says Chamesh Asanei Plishtim, and it lists the five, and then it lists Baha'avim, but then the next pasuk continues Mitemon Kol Eretz HaKnani, from the south, all the land of the Knani. So Rav is understanding that the word Baha'avim from the end of the one pasuk actually belongs with the beginning of the next pasuk. Baha'avim Mitemon, and the Avim will come from Temon, and then aside from them Kol Eretz HaKnani, you have other areas of the Knani, of Knani territory. So the Gemara says, Tani Nami Hochi, we learn similarly in a Brisa, Avim mi Teman bo, the Avim actually came from Teman, from a descendant of Esav. So why are they called Avim? She'ivsu es mekoyman, because they destroyed their place. They left their place and went to Eretz Plishtim, and therefore their land was left empty and destroyed. The word Avim is related to the word Ava, which is a rare word in a pasuk that means destroyed. So that's one explanation. Davaracha, another explanation. Avim she'ivu lelekois harbet. Another reason they're called Avim is because they desired many gods. They weren't satisfied with the gods of the Adonim, of the Temanim, that they had until then, and they wanted to take over the Plishti ones as well, and therefore they came and settled among them to learn from them. So according to that, Avim with an ayin is Gaushin as though it's Avim with an aleph. Aleph and ayin are often interchangeable in drushes. Davracha, yet another explanation, Avim, Shekolaroya Oysam, Achazatzai Avis. Anybody who sees them is going to be seized by trembling and shuddering and cramps. The word Avis then would be related to the word Avim, because they were mighty men. Omer of Yosef, Islu Shitzire Jori Shini, Lechokhab Bechad, and in fact, Rabbi Yosef says, you want to know how powerful and mighty these guys are, they have each one of them has 16 rows of teeth, whereas a regular, normal person has only one row of teeth, showing, okay, maybe it doesn't literally mean teeth, maybe it means weaponry or whatever, but it means they were tremendously powerful people, and therefore anybody who saw them or faced them in war would be terrified of them. So now we're saying that the Jewish people have yet to conquer them and dispossess them from Eretz Yisrael. Ben Yoyada points out that sometimes Dibur Torah Loshon Havai, we're going to have later in our Masechta, that sometimes the Torah talks in exaggerated forms, and therefore so it uses this exaggerated form over here, but not literally that they have 16 rows of teeth, just that they're very, very powerful. There was an interesting idea of Levi Yitzchak that his father talks about, Api Kabbalah, that these people, the Avin, they come from Olam HaToyu. So you have this Olam HaToyu and Olam HaTikun, and you have various Goyish nations are identified as having powers that come from Olam HaToyu. So here, now you have also in Kabbalah, you talk about those Igulim and Yoshe. You have two different ways that the spheres are configured. One of them being called Igulim's concentric circles, which is related to Olam HaToyu. So he explains that when we say over here that Echazate Avis, that each one, that any person who sees them is going to be seized by cramps, and then curving, like his body is going to curve out of it, and curve and bend out of fear, that represents that these people themselves were, that these people themselves were, are descended from a curved type of spheres, the world of Igulim, rather than the world of Yosher, as the Jewish people come from, where Yisrael is related to the word Yosher.
So now we'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, that the Pasuk makes a point of saying that they were actually they were there because they had conquered conquered part of the Plishti territory, and now the Jewish people are able to conquer it from them, representing the idea of how we take Olam HaTohu and turn it into Olam HaTikun. So we'll talk about that more tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.